Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
And now it's on to our Friday roundup of the week's news. It was an interesting week for Massachusetts politics, but let's test your knowledge.
Which Democrat made headlines this week when he entered the race to challenge Senator Scott Brown in 2012?
Hi, I'm Seti Warren, the mayor of Newton. Many of you don't know me.
Well, many of you do now. Also this week, the corruption trial of former State House Speaker Sal DeMasi let loose a flood of accusations about postdated checks, no work jobs, winks, nods, and more Italian surnames than most of us could hope to keep track of.
How can you practice in this town if you're not going to say whether you thought you did the right thing here as a practicing attorney?
We'd refer you to the transcript of the trial where Mr. DePasio gave his truthful testimony. Right. Thank you.
And how do you put to rest the notion that Massachusetts' universal health care law is different than the federal law championed by President Barack Obama? Well, if you're former Governor Mitt Romney, you try to do it with PowerPoint.
Our plan was a state solution to a state problem. And his is a power grab by the federal government to put in place a one-size-fits-all plan across the nation.
Well, we'll start right there with our Week in Review panelists, David Bernstein, political reporter for the Boston Phoenix. Welcome back, David.
Glad to be here.
And Jeff Jacoby, op-ed columnist for the Boston Globe. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thank you.
Jeff, let's start right there with Governor Romney and his PowerPoint presentation at Ann Arbor in Michigan. Do you think that in sort of trying to find a line or a bright line in his mind between the health care reform he championed in Massachusetts versus what we have nationally now, that Governor Romney was successful in saying, nope, not the same thing?
He's been trying for months to find that line. He hasn't found it yet. I don't see any indication that he's going to find it anytime soon. One of the most amazing things about the reaction to his speech, which got a big buildup by the Romney people as well as by the whole political talking class, was the preemptive attack on it by the Wall Street Journal,
right,
which ran this phenomenally huge, devastating, massive editorial the day that the speech was to be given. If that wasn't a signal of how the right in general is going to react, I don't think anything was. He's looking for a line that I don't think exists. It's been said over and over and over again that Obamacare was modeled in large part on Romney care. I don't see how he's going to walk away from that.
David, you've written how you think that the best thing for Governor Romney to do is to just not talk about it.
Well, I don't know if I would say that exactly. I think he needs to, he's going to be asked about it, so he needs to have his lines that he's saying about it. I think that he needs to try to be talking, the way I put it is that you don't want to be playing on the other guy's field, and this is the other guy's field. The more, even if he feels like he's winning any particular battle on this issue, it's a losing issue. The same way that last time he ran, every time he talked about abortion and same-sex marriage and these other social issues, trying to convince everybody how good he was on them, he was playing on the wrong field. It was putting the wrong topic into the conversation. And so that's why this was such a strange strategy to me, to start the campaign season off by drawing, like Jeff said, a tremendous amount of attention to a speech on this issue.
I wonder if there might have been, I'm thinking of two factors that might have gone into it. One might be, deal with it now, let everybody talk about it now, let's get beat up over it now, right, and then the campaign will move on to other issues. It may. It's conceivable.
It's hard to conceive healthcare drifting away as an issue.
Because the national issue, the national healthcare is such a big deal for so many people, especially on the right. I wonder if there might also have been some attempt to use the campaign strategy or the tactics of the last war. Well, Barack Obama had this big Jeremiah Wright problem. He went and gave a big speech, and that seemed to work. Mitt Romney, had a religion problem in the eyes of many evangelical voters. He gave a big speech. That seemed to put that to rest. Maybe they thought, the third time would work as well. If so, I think they're disappointed.
And here's the weird thing about it, because I agree with Jeff that may have been the strategy. And in fact, and as I also wrote in that same thing that you're referring to, it may be that they think that this is ultimately sort of a good field for him, even though he loses the health care specifically. Mm-hmm. When he's talking about things he did as governor, and I'm a problem solver, and I have these PowerPoints of what I'm going to do next and all that, maybe that puts a good image in general Republican voters, certainly not the Wall Street Journal folks. But one of the fascinating things, though, is that normally, and in the instances that Jeff was referring to from the last campaign, what you see when candidates try to do that is for the next 24 or 48 hours, you see their surrogates out publicly trying to spin
right.
how good a job he did and how this turns the corner. None of them are out there doing that. You saw a little statement from Scott Brown. Chris Christie said something today about, who's not a surrogate for Romney, but you know said something about it was a good tone or something like that. But there's been nobody out there sort of pushing a line that he's done well on this issue, which leads me to think that maybe that's deliberate. Like Jeff said, let's just let ourselves get beat up for a little while and then
what was the name of that American satellite after the Sputnik when there was this rush by NASA to try to catch up? And you would see this, I mean, to this day, you occasionally see the video, the film of the first American rockets going up, you know, about 2 feet up into the air and then sinking back down. I this played kind of like that. Yeah.
Well,
it never really got off the launch pad.
I think for like maybe the Republican rank and file, one of the problems with Romney's speech this week is that it highlighted once again one of the other strong criticisms of him, and that's sort of his flip-flopping on major issues. And, Romney himself reacted to that criticism saying, you know, I'm a man who sticks to my gun, so let's listen to him.
A lot of pundits around the nation are saying that I should just stand up and say this whole thing was a mistake, that it was just a boneheaded idea, and I should just admit it was a mistake and walk away from it. I, in fact, did what I believed was right for the people of my state.
So, Jeff, this cut reminds me that there's the issue of Romney and his, changing his opinion or his stance on certain issues. But then there's also the issue of the party itself. Because if I remember correctly, sort of back in the time when the Massachusetts law was being hashed out, many Republican leaders, were actually quite supportive of the plan as the first step to ultimately cost containment and things like that. So is there sort of the subtext here is also how much the party has shifted away from where it once was?
I don't remember what the talk was among Republicans nationally. If you mean Republican leaders among Massachusetts, there weren't many then. There aren't
right.
many now. I'm not a Republican,
well,
but I certainly never, I remember having and expressing doubts about the thing from the day that I was invited by then Governor Romney to come into the office and sit down and, have him lay out for me what he was planning on proposing.
Let me just say, the reason why I ask is because, for example, I was looking back at, a late 80s policy paper from the Heritage Foundation, so well-regarded, mostly conservative institution that said, hey, having an individual mandate is not such a bad thing.
Yeah. Yes, I think in the intellectual sphere, there's definitely been a shift. There's now much more of a libertarian attitude among a lot of conservatives. There's much more of a resentment of mandates being imposed top-down by the government. Whatever the Heritage Foundation might have proposed back then, certainly not the way that Heritage is. Although, I don't know, Heritage actually did play a role in drafting Romney.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's being strongly countered, for example, by groups like Cato.
Absolutely.
Which has gone on the offense from day number one against Romney Care. They'll certainly be able to find conflicting voices from the past, but in terms of what's driving people now, there's this very strong principled opposition to mandates. And if that opposition didn't exist or wasn't felt so strongly 20 years ago, it is indeed very strong out there now.
Well, and I would argue, too, that that a couple of things happened. One is that there was sort of a, well, if Obama and the Democrats are for it, we must be against it. There was sort of that sort of, tidal movement about healthcare reform and the specific structure of it. But I think that there's also something specific about this mandate that while, first of all, Jeff is right that there's been a huge move towards the sort of libertarianism in the, sort of getting mainstreamed in Republican
right.
thought. But also, I would argue, and they can disagree, but during the actual debate over healthcare during the year or so that it was being knocked around and back and forth, that issue specifically was really only being hammered by libertarians, by folks. I don't know if you wrote about it. I wouldn't be surprised if you did. I did hear issues about it. But the main arguments were elsewhere. It really became an issue when that became the way that it could be knocked down as constitutional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Suddenly
yeah.
it became the thing to grab onto because it was sort of an actionable aspect of it.
You could
eliminate it.
Well, obviously it's an issue that's not going away, so we're very likely to hear, whether he wants to or not, Governor Romney speak more about healthcare in the coming months. But if I can move on just briefly to other political matters in the Bay State, and other races, in fact. So there is the 2020 12 Senate race with our current incumbent, Senator Scott Brown. Seti Warren, mayor of Newton, throwing his hat into the ring after just a little over a year and a half as Newton's mayor. So your first thoughts on you know, as he acknowledged, Seti who?
Well, I think that the most important thing is that he's the first Warren in the race, because Warren Tolman is looking at it, and Elizabeth Warren is
I hope all three of them run. What a great primary that will be. The Warren primary.
Exactly. So, someone
now, Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren, that's been long rumored that she, you know, she's up for a national post that she's doing in an interim basis. She may be, the Republicans won't let her be named to it permanently, although Obama may be doing it as a, you know, what do they call it? The slipping them in appointments, whatever they call them.
Recess appointment.
But recess appointment, that's the word I was looking for. But if not, we could have three Warrens, which one of my Twitter followers suggested when I was talking about it, suggested that we would call it the Warren Wars.
Jeff, your thoughts on the Senate race?
I think it's certainly true that a lot of people hear the name Seti Warren, and unless they live in Newton or, you know, are really into local suburban politics across the state, will indeed say Seti who. It's a confusing first name. It's not, you know, somebody who's been a familiar public figure. I would say, given that all of the, let's call them first-tier candidates or prospects are so far steer clear of the race, for a second-tier, little-known candidate, you know, Seti Warren is certainly as competent as any of them. I would say for anybody who gets the nomination by the Democratic Party in Massachusetts, there's a big built-in advantage. But I would also say anybody who's the incumbent U.S. Senator from Massachusetts,
right,
even if he's a Republican, has a big built-in advantage. And I'm actually not sure which voters in Massachusetts prefer more, voting for Democrats or voting for incumbents. They're so, you know, the habit of doing both is
that's
so
one
ingrained.
That's one of the reasons why I think this is actually going to be such an interesting race, because not only does the Senator Scott Brown have his incumbency, he's got time and he's got fundraising opportunities.
But there's also
as well.
there's also the whole Scott Brown narrative of the guy that nobody knew beforehand who suddenly came out of nowhere in the space of 6 weeks.
He's the inspiration, you know, to this all the Seti Warrens
right
out there.
And he's, with all the complaints that the left may have against Scott Brown, he's a very good politician. He's been very smart for the most part of what he's done in office, where he's, you know, where he's drawn certain lines. I think he's been very smart and effective. And also, by the way, from what I hear from a number of people, he's done a very good job of the constituent services aspect of it.
Taking a page from Senator Kennedy's book. Then.
Yeah, and in fact, keeping some
whose
of the same people.
Whose picture he keeps in his Senate office.
No kidding.
There's a picture of Ted Kennedy in Scott Brown's Senate office.
Wow.
I'm not sure what that means, but it must mean something.
Before we run out of too much time, there's one more story that I want to get to briefly. And there's some fantastic tape from it, actually, and we have to thank our reporter, WBR's David Boeri. He's been spending every single day at federal court keeping track of the trial of former House Speaker Sal DeMacy. The prosecution this week argued that DeMacy's former law partner, Stephen Topazio, was taking kickbacks and then handing them over to DeMacy. But DeMacy's defense attorney, William Santolo, he had a different word for it when he spoke to reporters yesterday.
A retainer. It's like the bench player on a basketball team. You might never be called upon to play, but you sit there all the time and they pay you for sitting there.
That's a way to put it, I guess.
Well, he's going to get paid for saying it. If he's being paid by the number of people he convinces, his retainer is going to go way down. People know the difference between paying a bench player who may never get into the game, but who is clearly a part of the team, and funneling money into somebody who is a lawyer but is also the Speaker of the House, money that's coming from a company that is angling for a big contract with the state. Granted, he's still legally presumed innocent until the jury says otherwise, but boy, if this doesn't stink to high heaven, what does?
It just does not look good for DeMacy, does it?
Well, no, not so far, and we haven't gotten into the meat of the case is going to be sort of the less media-friendly, but the real sort of tracking the money, the real sort of, you know, having the FBI guys go in there with their, you know, with the checks and everything, and that's going to be a little more boring, but that's going to be the real meat of the case, and I think they've done a very good job of setting the stage for it with sort of the interesting stuff that lays out the the dimensions of what that money is going to mean.
Well, before we fully run out of time here, Anthony, I'm going to bring you back in for our hubbubs. What's the story that you want to talk about that didn't quite make it to above the fold this week?
Well, this story certainly didn't make it above the fold, and at the risk of tooting our own horn a little bit. So here's my hubbub. It's about a certain Boston-based radio program that celebrated a big day this year. Radio Boston turned one. And the fact that we're here is a testament to Meghna's great work, who's been here from the start of this last year anyway, and to great contributors like you two guys, and to all our great listeners who add such a great element to this program every day. So thank you all, and you know,
happy birthday.
We should pop a bottle of bubbly as soon as we get off the air, and
why wait till we're off the air?
Where's the cake?
That won't get us in trouble with the FCC.
Well, here's to one, and hopefully many more years. With the two of you as well. Jeff, you're hubbub.
Well, if my hubbub actually has legs, there may not be a second birthday for Radio Boston or for anybody else. You may have seen some of these
there
billboards.
There goes your retainer.
You may have seen some of these billboards around town. They're up on the side of roads, on some of the metro cars, the back of buses. They're actually around the country announcing that May 21st, that's a week from tomorrow, is Judgment Day, and for the vast majority of people on the planet Earth, that will be the end of existence. There's a small Christian group, a Christian sect, that has somehow calculated that May 21st is going to be Judgment Day. The rapture will take place, a select handful will be spirited up to heaven, and the rest of us are in for what is predicted to be a very terrible time. So I'm not expecting it to happen. I think most of us aren't. But just in case. Let me say goodbye to, you know.
It's been such a pleasure knowing you, Jeff, for such a short amount of time.
There will be time for one more week in review. We don't have to say, don't have to make our final farewells just yet.
The way you set that up, Jeff, I thought you were about to say something about public funding for public radio. But no, this is much bigger than that.
Much bigger.
Much bigger.
I don't want to burst Jeff's hubbub, but you asked for below the fold sorts of things, and I can release now, I can sort of publicly preview that our coming week's issue, which comes out right before the rapture, is going to be a special rapture issue.
Is
we're
going to
really? cover it entirely.
You must have the inside line on the fact that it's probably true.
Well, Meghna, think about it. How could you cover that story afterward?
Well, that's exactly what we thought. So we had to get in front of it, get in front of the story, as they say. So I figured I can write whatever I want in it because nobody's going to be around to complain afterwards, you know. So my hubbub is actually also this coming week. And this is just May 17th is the anniversary of same-sex marriage beginning. And what's sort of the non-story story is that nobody notices, nobody cares, nobody pays any attention. Nobody's when you mention it to people, they say, oh, how many years has it been? It's sort of a non-thing. As it happens, it's the 7th anniversary, which could have led to all kinds of 7-year itch kind of, you know, columns by people like me, but there, you know, it's just sort of even in the Republican, the National, you know, you remember the 2004, you know, when this was all happening,
right.
The 2004 election, the Republicans were all about same-sex marriage, you know, to a large degree, and I think actually it can credit some of the libertarians on that side who, for the most part, don't care about same-sex marriage. That the Republican Party doesn't seem to be as obsessed with it.
One thing you have not seen in all these 7 years is a referendum in which same-sex marriage has been approved by voters. It's been imposed by courts. It's been voted by a few state legislatures, but it's never been approved by voters at the polls.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I'm actually going to save my hubbub for next week because, you know, if it is indeed our last week, I'm going to go out with a good one. Jeff Jacoby, columnist for the Boston Globe, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
David Bernstein, political reporter for the Boston Phoenix, thank you as well.
My pleasure.
Well, stay with us because after a short break, a century and a half of invention and ingenuity, all from MIT. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.